Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the spirit?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat episode 451. I'm your host for the day, Zach Ryan, and I'm joined today by Per Schneider.
Hello.
And Tom Brian Altano.
Hey.
Wow. Yeah, I'm just kidding, you guys. It's me, Zach Ryan, and I'm here with Brian and Tom.
Hi. Pair. Yeah, I did a good pair there.
That was like a hauntingly good
That's
pair.
That's all I know is just a hello.
Yeah, I wonder for this April Fool's week if we April Fooled anybody into thinking that the German was on the show.
That's true. I think it worked for half a second.
Guys, I'm feeling like I'm in a weird mood because I'm drinking tea. I don't do an afternoon tea. I usually do a coffee.
Okay.
And I think I've made a terrible mistake.
Is this a new thing for you, or afternoon?
Yeah, I've been having trouble sleeping. I've been waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning and just feeling real existential for a few hours before going back
to
bed.
Isn't that
and
great?
I thought it was like an old man's thing, but yeah. It could be just a caffeine thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be or alcohol.
I don't do a lot of that these days.
Really?
Yeah. Cleaning up my act.
You're missing out.
I found Jeebus.
I'm getting back into it.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's good to have a hobbies. Speaking of hobbies, you know what I love? Nintendo games.
I agree.
What?
I know. There was some news this week. We thought that it was going to be a very slow week, and then it turns out that we actually got some pretty interesting news. Well, you can't see me out there, but I'm doing news with quotation marks with my hands.
Really
because,
big air quotes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we are, of course, talking about this supposed Best Buy leak, as people are talking about it, but it's more listings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to get into this story. So the story is that this week, Wario 64 broke the story. Wario 64, if you guys don't know him, he's a big Twitter man. Mm-hmm. He's got a good following, and he has broken a lot of video game stories, found out a lot of hot scoops, and
yeah.
Specifically, he's like pretty renowned for finding stuff out Nintendo-wise.
Well, he's like, if you follow him, like if you're ever looking for great deals and stuff, he's like a fantastic source for that. And
yeah.
Because of that, he is just constantly in retail listings all over the world. You know, and it's the usual suspects in terms of like snitches, right? Like it's like Amazon France is always snitching on video games before they come out. And then, you know, there's Best Buy Canada is always snitching on games before they come out. I think Bethesda even made a joke about them at their press conference last year.
Yeah, well, that was Walmart Canada.
Yeah,
Walmart Canada, yeah.
Exactly. Canadian, super nice, also huge video game snitches. So, yeah, Wario 64 has constantly found this stuff, and he found a series of very peculiar but also obvious but also just, I don't know, perfectly awesome, great news for fans listings mm-hmm. on Best Buy. You want to run through them, Zach? Is there some good
ones here?
And these are in the
like back end employee listing.
Yeah.
So it's not public.
So, yeah, I can't remember if it was him or the person that he was reporting from because the initial leak, the big leak, was that Persona 5 is coming to Switch.
Right. Right.
Long rumored, often talked about, and listed there inside of the Best Buy catalog was Persona 5 for Nintendo Switch,
right.
Which is sort of problematic. It's suspect. Into that in a minute, but. The thing about it is that each of these listings has their own unique SKU, which lends a little more validity to it. And then the person that he was reporting from was this dude, Mystic,
mm-hmm.
who is also like a big Persona 5 Twitter follower.
Translates a lot of info.
Yeah, translates
right.
a lot of info for Persona. And he or Wario 64, I can't remember who said this, but they said that they were very familiar with Best Buy's internal cataloging and that they could confirm that this was, in fact, from a Best Buy listing. Now, the issue here is that these listings exist for products that are speculative, right? So
yeah.
When we hear a rumor from Nintendo, IGN does this as well. Like if we hear a rumor that Metroid Prime Trilogy is coming to Nintendo Switch, we have a team that creates objects in our back end
mm-hmm.
that allows us to tag things, you know, like we create a Metroid Prime object. And
right.
Metroid Prime Trilogy for Switch object. And that says, you know, it attaches different hashtags, it attaches different tags so that when you're searching for things, these things will pop up. And it is of my understanding that this is probably what Best Buy is doing for these listings, right? Like,
yeah.
Persona 5 has been rumored for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't surprise me at all that they would put that in their catalog to have as something as a placeholder so that when Persona 5 does eventually get kicked down, if it's going to happen, they're already set up to manufacture or to retail that as quickly as possible.
Right.
So I did some research just looking back at previous Best Buy listings, kind of how many times they'd hit the mark or been incorrect or correct and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing that stuck out to me is in 2012, there was a Best Buy listing for a game called Yoshi's Land for the Wii U that doesn't exist, and I assume was a placeholder of some kind for Woolly World or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
But
I know before...
Yeah, so they're not 100% on listings like this, right? It's not like a perfect track record for Best Buy listings.
Before, I think, the last direct of last year or the first direct of this year, Amazon did this thing where they listed basically 13 placeholders for unannounced Nintendo games. And it was sort of just like, unannounced Switch game, unannounced Switch game, unannounced Switch game. And then obviously all those Switch games got announced. So it became a big thing, which is really cool. And so everybody has their own way of doing that, right? And some people list the actual game. Some people make up some nonsense, such as like, you know, Mario House 2 or whatever.
But I loved the original Mario House.
Yeah. And so I think what's interesting...
What happens when Mario stops being polite and starts getting real?
That's the great series, right? Mario's House and Luigi's Mansion and Toad's Shack.
It'd be the only time where Luigi got it better than Mario did. But the interesting thing here, obviously, Metroid Prime Trilogy was one of the big ones. We've seen that game, it was on Wii U as a Wii game that you could download digitally through their eShop. Now, Wii U actually had a virtual console. Nintendo Switch does not. This announcement or this leak happened the same day where a Nintendo said, hey, we have a bunch more games coming to NES Online. They have their infrastructure right now to drop things like Lost Levels and Punch-Out. Every single month, there's two new NES games. Right now, they do not have an infrastructure to sell you old video games like this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So something like Link to the Past or Metroid Prime Trilogy, it makes you go, are they just going to drag and drop that ROM? Or are they making something like a Link's Awakening? Are they doing like a Wind Waker HD type of thing where they're actually porting a full $60 game here? Like, what do you guys actually think this could be? Like, part of me goes... You can't remake Link to the Past. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. But then I would have said the same thing about Link's Awakening 3 months ago. So here
True.
We are.
I think that the best tactic with analyzing these is to not treat them as equals.
Mm-hmm.
I think that things like the Persona rumor or the Persona listing and the Metroid listing are more likely guesses on Best Buy's part.
Yeah.
And maybe Link to the Past is just a less likely guess, right? It's not the same level of confidence probably in terms of just like on spec making that listing.
Yeah.
That's my vibe at least.
Yeah, I came in a little hot this morning to the office talking about this because the way that we had initially started talking about coverage was like, how are we covering the Nintendo leak? How are we covering this thing? And Tom and I sort of got into it with a couple other people on the staff here, not in like a...
Fisticuffs.
Not like a, you know...
There was blood.
It wasn't a conflict by any means, but it was just like, hey, let's talk about this in terms of like what this actually means because... This doesn't say to me that these titles are coming. This says to me that somebody thinks that these titles might come eventually.
Right.
And like that's totally plausible and 100% more reasonable than saying like Best Buy has leaked three enormous games coming to Nintendo Switch. Tom, you had an interesting point this morning in that conversation about Persona specifically that I wanted you to talk a little bit about.
Yeah, so the rumor about Persona on Switch has been a persistent one for basically no other reason than Joker in Smash Bros, which is a fair reason, but it's not necessarily like we don't have Metal Gear Solid 5 on Switch, right? Like
we should.
Or, you know, the Metal Gear games didn't come out just because Snake was in Smash back in the day. The thing is, though, the most recent rumors about Persona 5 have been that it would come to Switch in a version called Persona 5S or P5S.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a few months ago that that rumor happened, and it was kind of unsubstantiated and nobody really heard much about it anymore. But then earlier this week, we heard that P5S was going to be formally announced. This was an official reveal from Atlus. P5S was going to be revealed on April 25th, I believe, which is right after more information about P5R,
which is the remix. Yeah,
we don't know what's going on with that specifically still yet, but we know there's new character. It's probably what they did with P4.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. Persona is in specific, Atlus in general, but Persona specifically has this long history of releasing a game, and kind of like Final Fantasy does as well, where they'll release like an international version that's a remixed version of the plot or the story, like the characters or something like that, where they'll add additional characters or change some things around. FES, Persona 3 FES added an entirely different like second playthrough. Persona 4 Golden had different characters and different cutscenes.
So P5R or Persona 5 The Royal, as its full title is what we assume that's going to be. And then P5S, we don't know yet, and what is the name of the rumored Switch version. So the thing that I pointed out to you earlier, Zach, is if Best Buy has insider information that Persona 5S is actually a Switch Persona, then why is the listing Persona 5 for Nintendo Switch? Why is it not P5S or Persona 5S? If they know for sure that listing should have been just P5S, it wouldn't have been Persona 5.
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
that's,
no, that's
like
a good point.
It's just like a really small thing that just makes it seem like probably this is a guess or a placeholder.
Yeah, but the thing that throws me about this story is the SKUs.
Yeah.
Right? Like each of these SKUs is a different number. But that doesn't necessarily mean that these aren't internal Best Buy SKUs or placeholders for this point.
They,
like, they might assign SKUs through Best Buy for their own those products as placeholders and then replace them when official SKUs come in.
Yeah,
right.
They have SKUs and UPCs too, which is like the barcode number.
But if you could also make up your own
exact same thing.
But if you could also make up your own SKUs, why wouldn't it be like, you know, like 4269 or something? What, like these numbers look so official that it was like that's like a real, you know, let could potentially be a real SKU.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's all very interesting, but
I think they only
it's
use
hard
that
to
for,
make any
for
definitive
Wario.
Thing.
Yeah, that's any Wario game has the same exact SKU every time.
That's his phone number is 42069.
Yeah.
I think that my big takeaway here is what you were saying earlier, Zach, which is all of these things are unsubstantiated or unconfirmed and could be a million things, but are also like not unlikely. And so if they come true, it's not like Best Buy actually knew anything.
Specifically with Metroid Prime Trilogy and Persona, those are two of probably the most sought after games on Nintendo Switch.
Right.
You know, like we get dozens of questions a week when we solicit for Question Block, and so many of them are like, when is Metroid Prime coming?
Right.
When is Persona coming?
Right.
And so we obviously there's a rabid fan base for both of those games on Switch. And so I think when people see this kind of listing, I'm not going to call it a leak, but when people see this kind of thing, they have a tendency to be like, oh my God, what if this is really happening? You know, like it's wishful thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, I don't know, with the Metroid thing is still a little sore because we found out recently that the next installment in that franchise is potentially years and years away. And so this, like we've said before, is a pretty quick and easy make good. You know, it's also like, I don't know, those games rule, and the Switch is a lot of people's first Nintendo console, and having the ability to play them for the first time for many is fantastic, and selfishly for us, to play again and again.
Right. So. Speaking of games that you can play for the first time, we've got some NES games coming to Switch. We briefly touched on this a moment ago, but every month Nintendo's putting out more games for Nintendo Switch Online. This month we're getting Super Mario Bros. Lost Levels, which famously is Super Mario Bros. 2 in Japan, released here as Lost Levels, and it is probably the hardest Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. Those lost levels get intense.
Yeah, this effectively takes the tile set from the original Super Mario Brothers and then breaks all the rules and makes you do completely outlandish stuff, like jump off a springboard and fly basically across an entire level and land on like one brick and then do a running jump onto another. Like, it's just insane. It feels like someone used a time machine and Mario Maker to make a sequel to the original Mario Brothers.
Yeah, so Nintendo originally brought Doki Doki Panic over to the United States as a Super Mario Brothers 2 because this version of Super Mario Brothers 2 was too difficult for chubby American babies.
Yeah, it was deemed too hard for the big boys
in
America.
We also get Punch-Out featuring Mr. Dream.
Which is secretly too hard.
Yeah.
No, seriously, like that is I have like a 30 something year feud with you know, Mike Tyson or White Tyson.
I was gonna say Mr. Dram.
Yeah, this is like one of the only like classic Nintendo games I've never beaten.
Really?
Yeah, we did a video here at IGN a couple years ago. I wish I could find it. Where we all challenged each other to try to beat this game, and Destin Legarry stayed in the office until like 2 o'clock in the morning to beat Tyson.
Yeah.
Like Tyson is Mr. Dream, which was a whitewasher, isn't it? Tyson after his numerous run-ins with the cops.
after it turned out he was just a bad uncle over there.
Yeah. Really bad. This is a really hard game. So, I don't know. You can play it with save states now, so that'll be fun.
Sure.
You can cheap your way through it.
And lastly, we get Star Soldier, which is a top-down shoot-em-up. Mm-hmm. Sort of a pioneer in this regard.
Yep.
Just an 8-bit side-scroller. Or not side-scroller, but vertical shooter.
So. I feel like I bought this one on a virtual console a couple years ago and wasn't crazy about it, but
never been a shmup guy myself. I like R-Type. R-Type is probably the only shmup that I was ever really.
You gotta play Life Force. I feel like you'd really dig that.
You and I have talked about that quite a bit. Yeah,
I think you'd really like
I think we saw it in a store in Paris.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's coming,
we were talking about
it's coming to the Konami collection.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then lastly, I wanted to touch on Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. Tokyo 2020 is coming. And this is not really newsworthy because these are a collection of mini games. But what I wanted, what I put in the here for the run of the show is that this is the sixth of these games.
That's crazy.
And I had no idea. I remember when the original one was released.
Right.
And this is like, even as big as a Nintendo fan as I am, when I saw the announcement for 2020, I was like, oh, that's interesting that they're bringing that back for the Switch. And then like I looked on the Wikipedia page, I was like, oh, these never went away. They just keep making these games.
Every 4 years?
And they're all rated around like
2 years?
Yeah, and they're all rated around like 7.0. Like they're actually like decent minigame collections.
I imagine they make crazy amounts of money.
I didn't look at all of them, but I think the first title sold like 2.4 million copies.
Can I admit something?
Yes.
I've never played a single second of a single one of these
games. Me neither.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember... Yeah.
They're like just little sports mini games. Like they're not anything revolutionary. They're not terrible. They're just sports mini games where Sonic and Mario are in.
My love for Mario is like directly proportionate to my dislove for Sonic. So.
Yeah, we've all heard the quote. Yeah. So all in all, like a relatively slow news week, but I did think that those three stories were worth covering off.
Right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay, great.
Anxiety. Like, oh God, we've got 60 seconds left in the show.
You'll have to excuse me. I've just discovered the soundboard taking over the host seat here. I promise I'll use that sparingly, but I just didn't really have a great transition for this April Fool's story. So
that scared me.
We did, in case you guys missed it, we did do a pretty hot April Fool's video where we made a phony baloney April Fool's Direct, wherein we announced a bunch of great games are coming to the Nintendo Switch. And also a bunch of terrible made-up games and apps like Carfax and Tinder, and we're coming to the Nintendo Switch. So
IGN famously does like a really big April Fool's joke every year. We didn't do one last year.
Yeah, we took last year off just because we were a little bit strapped in terms of like bandwidth.
Or that was the joke.
Yeah. Ooh, April Fool's. We didn't make one.
And like going back to like the Legend of Zelda movie trailer, which we partnered with a like small channel before that was even a thing, like 18 years ago. we've done so many. Like we did Optimus Prime and Titanfall, and we did a fake Harry Potter TV show.
We did a fake Netflix Star Wars series.
Yep. We did a Back to the Future Fast and Furious crossover parody that like Vin Diesel ended up seeing, and we filmed a reaction video of him watching it. So they're always really fun. I'm sorry for the people that saw this one, because we made a fake Nintendo Direct, and it was like really, not to toot our own horns, but really believable for like the first minute or so.
Yep.
And then it just veers.
Well, in the same way that we were talking about expectation for like Metroid Prime Trilogy and Persona and wishful thinking in that regard, we started off this fake direct with Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker coming to Switch, and then progressively got crazier. Now, I purposely chose you two to be on the show this week because, Tom, it was your idea.
Yep.
Devilish man, you. And Brian wrote the script, and I actually wasn't super involved with it until the very end. I helped with a lot of like the metadata and backend stuff getting it published, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about the process and what it took to get this video made and how we went about it. So
I don't want to like toot our own horns or anything like that.
If you say toot your own horn one more time, I'm gonna fine you.
You know, like play my own trombone over here.
I'm not trying to foggle my own dolphin.
No, this is
those are so much worse.
This is really not us like victory lapping and gloating, but more the reason I think this is in the run of show right now is because we made a Nintendo Direct, and now I really understand how much work goes into those things. And like our editor who edited this video worked on this for 36 hours.
Dude, Jordan killed it.
Yeah, Jordan, the day before it was set to be, like, we had to put it in the CMS, our content management system, on a Friday because it had to publish by like midnight on Monday morning for April Fools. So Thursday and Friday, Jordan scrapped his whole day and just spent his whole day like finalizing the edit, and ended up staying here overnight to finish it. And like, it was a Herculean lift on his part.
And the good thing about our jobs
also
is
we gave him 2 days off for that. So like, don't come at us for that.
After a weekend too. So yeah, it was 4 full days off.
That's right.
No, the reason I bring this up is because, we are lucky enough here at IGN, we don't work for Nintendo. We don't make directs. Although a lot of people thought Nintendo made this, which is
the highest compliment.
It was.
We made this video, and then we walked away, and we don't have to ever do one again. Nintendo puts out a direct, and people give it 6 minutes, and they're like, when's the next one? Imagine having to do like 6 of these a year, 12 of these a year, or something like that.
And ours is good, but like if you look at it closely, you see all the corners that we cut and all the little things here and there that just aren't quite as polished as Nintendo, who are doing these professionally, and theirs are, you know, sometimes six times as long, and then they're also working with 30 different game developers to make sure all the assets are perfect and things. Like the amount of work, I completely agree, the amount of work that went into this and must go into one of those things is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and then there's things like making sure all the branding is right and the logo's right. I mean, if you look at that last Nintendo Direct, or one of the last Nintendo Directs that had that Assassin's Creed trailer in it, and it was like choppy, I don't know if that was just like a weird buggy upload, because I saw that game at PAX and like it looks legit, like it's running well.
Oh yeah, awesome.
So there's hiccups. There are some Easter eggs in this video that I don't think people caught. One of them is the dude who hosts the video, the elderly Japanese man who is an extra we hired in, or an actor we hired in LA through a casting call, is his name Google roughly translates to like spring prank.
Yeah, that's really good. So I did want to go kind of round robin and talk about what our favorite fake announcement was, and then like what our favorite like joke is from it. And so Brian, I'll start with you. You made a bunch of these Photoshops and like came up with a bunch of the ideas for the fake game. So.
Yeah, I mean it's really funny because it's like when you write a joke and then you have to build an asset for it, they're two very different things. Like, it's so easy for a writer to just be like, Wayne Knight's erotic pinball.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, what would that logo look like? And then your brain has to go, oh, it would be like a 90s PC game.
The shaving cream was a nice touch in that thumbnail. Yeah.
Or like, I did this thing called like Grandfather Bath Simulator.
Yeah.
And then I looked up the Microsoft Flight Simulator logo and jacked the bottom of that said Steam Edition, because I think having like a Steam Edition of a bath game is very funny. To me. So yeah, stuff like that. I googled a logo for Anthem, the video game, and only got logos for Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, so I just jammed them together.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, there's a I think the Star Fox 64 logo has the Carfax.
Yes, Fox. Yeah,
which is that's a walk. But yeah, it's very, very, very dumb. I loved making that.
I really liked Uber in the Crazy Taxi logo.
Yeah, that was
good.
And
then the Crazy Taxi guy photoshopped into a Prius or something like that. That was very good. Probably of the Photoshops, nothing beats Donkey Kong's Divorce Cruise for
me. Yeah, that one's really funny.
I was really happy with that.
I really liked that. Yeah. And then
you need two copies of that game, too. Sorry.
The thing that really killed me when I was watching early cuts of it was, as silly as this is, I really liked the joke where it was like, and I'm not, again, tooting my own horn here because I didn't have anything to do with these parts. I really liked the bit where it said Fallout 76 and you're like, ha ha ha. And then it says Fallout 77. And you're like, oh, that's funny. And then it cuts away.
Uh-huh.
And then it cuts back. It's Fallout 78.
Yeah.
And so it's just like this really nice, like,
and then
timing.
Fallout 2016 election.
Yeah. There was just
which
really
we're
good
all playing
right now. In fact, yeah.
It was super fun to work on. The response was wonderful. I watched pretty much every reaction video.
Yeah.
It's just like a joy to.
Yeah.
And it's also, there was a couple people who were like not pissed, but they were like,
there were a couple people that were pissed.
Yeah, there were a couple,
for whatever you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. But there were a couple people that are like, hey, like, this is like the first minute and a half of this is basically Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker come to Switch. I want those things.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Think Geek makes a bunch of fake products every year, and part of you is like, oh, you know, maybe a Tauntaun sleeping bag would make sense. And then they make it. This was one of those things where this started off with the stuff that, like, you really want, and then it goes away, and you're like, wait, but no, but they should have that.
Well, yeah. I almost regret how we opened it a little bit. I don't fully, but like, I almost regret how we opened it a little bit, because there was this, at least in our eyes, we were like, oh, no one's gonna believe this, right? Like, we just gotta start with easy stuff to just like gimmies, just to ease people into like, maybe this is real. And we like picked things that people wanted so much that they just like completely bought in. And I was like, oh no, we went too far. We went too far.
Yeah. Either way, I have tremendous respect for Nintendo for the way they make real directs. I will be less persistent about begging for directs, although it makes all of our jobs easier. And
once a month, please.
That's your takeaway?
Yeah.
Real quickly, before we move off this topic, I will say that my favorite joke in the whole thing is the Real Housewives of Orange County and Knuckles.
Yep.
That one's really funny. And then I also, this is a very subtle joke on Tom's part that I really love, but Tom had to do some last minute rewrites because we realized realized like we didn't have enough info in the presentation.
Yep.
And so Tom wrote this description of like, finally, the Nintendo 64 classic Ocarina of Time comes to Nintendo Switch and is portable since the first time it was playable on 3DS. And like, that's such an underappreciated line, because it's like, well, yeah, this is the first time it would have been released. Like, it's great.
I want to give a quick shout out to Mark Ryan Salee for just killing it on the VO,
yeah,
too.
He did
a really good job. We actually had Destin in there originally, and I was like, people have heard this man's voice for thousands of hours, and he was like, hello, welcome to the... Yeah, Destin has such an iconic voice. It would have been like, if one of us did it, you'd be like, oh, I know who that is immediately. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So before April Fool's, Brian, you were back east at PAX.
That's right.
Or actually, as we were wrapping up this video, you were in PAX in Boston for PAX.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, and you got to play a handful of good games coming to the Switch here soon. So I wanted you to go kind of rapid fire on some stuff that you saw at PAX. And then I also threw in Mextermination Force there at the end, because I know you and Tom have been playing that.
Yep. So PAX was really cool. It's obviously a fantastic show, because it showcases like really big AAA stuff, but also lots of great indie stuff. And I think it does a really good job of meshing all those things together. Nintendo had a pretty significant presence at PAX, with a big booth in the center of the show that had this gigantic sort of rotating Yoshi diorama, that had a bunch of playable games there, a bunch of them we've played already. They also had some behind closed door stuff that we were privy to, and they also had this weird side booth. And the side booth had... Mortal Kombat 11, Hellblade, and Assassin's Creed.
Which we just got a date for Hellblade.
Really?
April 11th.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Oh, that's very soon.
Yeah.
All of those games were playable, but you were not allowed to film them in any way, which immediately set off red flags, right? And we were all like, why? And they're like, oh, well, these are earlier builds, and you know, we're just not ready to put them out there and stuff like that. So I did get to play Mortal Kombat 11, which, again, I went in going... I have a feeling this is going to be a mess. I know that they had to build a bunch of character models from the ground up to run on that game, because they're so high res on the HD twins.
Wow.
And so I was hesitant. Now, bear in mind, I am not like a fighting game expert. I don't know how to like count frames and stuff like that. What I played was fun. It was rock solid. It didn't hiccup. It didn't look ugly. It looked really good. And granted, this is like, it's simple, right? It's two characters beating the hell out of each other and like some pretty cool looking backgrounds. I found like myself switching between control styles. I couldn't really settle on if I wanted to use the weird, not so D-pad on the Switch or the stick. I don't think anybody...
Were you playing on the Pro Controller or are you playing on Joy-Con?
I was playing it only in handheld mode.
Oh.
Yeah, they wouldn't let anybody play on TVs.
It was okay.
Only handheld mode at the show. And I will say that like it's totally fun. It's totally awesome. It totally works. I don't think this will be anybody's like tournament play version. Mm. But if like you're a casual Mortal Kombat guy and you have a Switch, this is going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about checking it out on Switch. What about the level of violence? I assume that there's no... scaling back there. I mean, it was still just as gory as the stuff we've seen everywhere else.
It was incredibly gory.
Yeah, they're not the sweat's not flying off of like Super Nintendo.
It's not like the Super Nintendo one. No, it's really fun. It's very gory. It's very campy. If you've seen trailers for this game, you'll know that like you know Johnny Cage is one of the funniest characters in the game. He you know kills you with an Oscar. He at one point pulled out like a 12-inch scale action figure of himself and made it do splits. It's weird. It's great. It's campy. It's goofy. It's self aware. It's having a good time.
Cool.
I played Cyber Shadow, which is the I said that basically it's this year's The Messenger, which was last year's Shovel Knight. That's a walk. The reason it's connected to Shovel Knight is because Yacht Club's
publishing it.
Yeah, they're publishing it, and I was talking to Sean Velasco, who's been on the show.
Yeah,
good guy. Shout out to him. Those guys listen all the time. They were talking about how they are not simply just like dragging and dropping this game onto their with their logo. They are like sort of like executive producing it.
Cool.
Like they're getting in and they're having conversations with the creator. It's basically like a one person game about level design and checkpointing and making bosses easier or harder and you know adding this and taking away that. And so I find that really interesting because they're not really just treating this like we're just a label and we're going to dump your game out there. They're actually helping the production along, which is really cool. Cyber Shadow is very retro Ninja Gaiden-esque, side-scrolling platforming game, very action-heavy, super 16-bit. It's like...
Is it too close to The Messenger? That's my only concern.
I think that like it carves its own identity in that it's less, I would say, like... kind of goofy. Like,
okay.
The Messenger had a lot of like very funny writing, and I think this feels a lot more like Ninja Gaiden.
It's
a little more serious. I'd say it's also a little bit harder from what I played too.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm okay with two games in 40 years being sort of similar to Ninja Gaiden, right? I saw a lot of people on Twitter being like, oh, they just ripped off The Messenger. And it was like, well, no.
Imagine that those games are probably both in development at the same time for a very long time.
Exactly. I played Box Boy and Box Girl. Never really been the biggest fan of those games, but I got to play co-op with Damon, and they're actually really fun now.
Oh, co-op with Damon is my favorite mobile game.
Yeah, so Box Boy, if you played it before on Wii U or DS or 3DS or whatever, is you're a box and you extend yourself to create longer versions of yourself to make long sort of Tetris shaped boxes to traverse areas, collect things, and reach goals.
It's a metaphor for life, really.
I think so. Yeah, I had a lot of questions like
it's about the boxes we make within ourselves. You know.
So this lets you play as the boy and the girl. I think her name is QC and QB or something like that. Doesn't matter. It's really not. But they interact with each other.
Tell me more about this Box Boy lore, please.
Yeah. So to me, this felt like something sort of like Snipper Clips, but as a side-scrolling game, in that you're yelling almost borderline sexual innuendo at each other to traverse environments and puzzles and grab items and get to the goal. It's really, really fun. It's a good time.
I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it's a slower paced platforming game than something like Mario, obviously, but it's also very puzzly. So I enjoy it.
Per and Jose were always big Box Boy advocates.
Yeah.
And I've never really gotten into the series either, so I'm glad that it's coming to Switch so I can give it a shot.
I played a small game called Little Friends, Dogs, and Cats,
which is
shamelessly, unabashedly Nintendogs.
Yeah.
It's not even like pretending it's anything else. Like, if you had hit me with like a small hammer in the head and you were like, Nintendogs is back, and I started this game, I'd be like, well, here it is. Where's the Mario hat? And they'd be like, it's not in this game. And I'd be like, oh, that's weird. The game starts with like a backyard shot where in first person you pick a dog or a cat. The main difference is instead of three versions like Nintendo always does, all the animals will be in one box. It's a weird sentence. And so I picked a dog and he's really cool. He's great. You get to pet him. It's Nintendogs. It's a touchscreen. You rub your hand on his head. It's got the hand silhouette. You go into an apartment. You can collect money. You can wash him. You can feed him. You can make
from the dog?
Yeah, you just get money.
Your dog doesn't pay rent.
Yeah. I had like $10,000. It was like me and a dog, an empty room at $10,000. And I'm like, this is like a weird Guy Ritchie movie.
I need to get a dog, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently they're moneymakers.
The demo didn't let us walk the dog, but it did let us feed him, which is really dystopian because it just meant he was probably pooping inside. Seth Macy was there too. He picked the dog, and Damon Hatfield was there and he picked the cat. So everyone enjoyed it. It's just Nintendogs. I don't know why Nintendo doesn't just make Nintendogs, but until then,
I mean, this company's good for these guys for seeing a void there and being like, yeah, we can do that.
Dude, also, it's not the first time Nintendo's done something like this recently, especially Wargroove came out and Nintendo was just like, sure. We're just going to love this instead of like calling it out or anything.
Now, big question here from our audience, I'm sure. Can you play as a good Shiba Inu boy?
I believe you can.
Yes.
Yes.
It's always been my lifelong dream to be a Shiba owner, and I'm going to name him Helicopter Jones.
That is a great name.
Thank you. Now, you guys have both been playing Mextermination Force, so quickly, if you could tell us about this little robot game.
Sure. So Mextermination Force comes out very soon on Nintendo Switch. This was not at PAX, but it's something we're both enjoying right now. And it is the new game from the person who made Gunman Clive, which is a sort of like hand-drawn cowboy Mega Man that came to 3DS and Wii U, and the collection just dropped on Switch for like $3.99 or $2.99 for both games. It's super cheap. And so the elevator pitch for that game was that you run from left to right in levels, you get guns, and you shoot bad guys, and you win. This is a brand new game. First of all, this is full color. It is not like sort of paper, sort of sepia-toned. And it plays sort of like Contra, but the pitch is that every stage is just one gigantic mech fight. And these mech fights are like kind of goofy and over the top, but they're also sort of climbable and they have multiple phases, and it makes for a really interesting sort of scenario.
You described it to me as Contra Shadow of the Colossus, which I think is a very apt description in that it's even similar to Cuphead, right? In that it's just these boss rush fights, you upgrade yourself in between the fights. And something I appreciate about it, it's obviously not as hard as Cuphead, but it's not like, you're not just gonna like blow through these fights on your first try.
I played a bunch of my flight back from PAX, and there was a bunch of bosses that just whooped my ass. But the cool thing about it is like you can kind of grind on bosses that you're good at and get money and pop into a shop, buy extra heart containers, buy new weapons. Like I unlocked this like laser gun that just basically ricochets everywhere, and it makes it easier to take down bosses. And you sort of have to chip away at them because every boss has this kind of exoskeleton of parts that you can destroy that makes it easier to get to, you know, these kind of like circular orbs that you hit with a baseball bat to explode. It's so strange. Yeah.
They're platforming shooter puzzles, which I really like. The one thing that drove me crazy is the physics-y jumping. I was mentioning that to you.
Yep.
But overall, it is like actually a really cool, challenging game that if you're into that sort of like just hard as hell boss fights. Mm-hmm.
You would do you learn like a climb move that lets you grab onto things, and so that gets very like Contra 3.
Yeah,
you know, when you're
the
holding
climb is
missiles.
Cool.
And it's cool. So yeah, please check this out. Mechstermination Force is the name of the game, and it's out very soon on Switch.
Excellent. Well, because this week was a lighter week, we've decided to go heavy on one of my favorite games of all time.
Great game.
Question Block, my friends.
I think Pear would say that's not a game.
Thank you for filling that those shoes.
We should have put Question Block in our fake direct.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay.
A nod.
Let's go round robin on these. I'll go ahead and start. But first question comes from Jason Whittle in the Nintendo Voice Chat Facebook forums. What Nintendo handheld or home console has the best games catalog? I wanted to start us off with kind of a heavy hitter. I think this is sort of a tough one, but I personally, my choice would be the SNES. I think just nostalgia-wise, and also that catalog is just so insane with the number of games, like high-quality games and from first-party and third-party developers, that I think still to this day, SNES is my favorite.
This is such a tough one for me because are you not counting like the virtual console backwards compatibility? Because the Wii U has tons, or 3DS, the Wii have tons of SNES games, right?
I think for the sake of argument, let's just say that these are original games on each console.
Got it. Okay.
That changes my answer then.
That's really good.
Because for a long time, my answer to that question was just snap the 2DS. Because for the 2DS, for $80, you can get the entire catalog of the DS and 3DS. Mm-hmm. And it's just like such amazing games on such a cheap system.
Mm-hmm. A bunch of us were tagged in a Twitter thread the other day about like all the Zeldas that are playable on Wii U.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that there's like a ton playable on 3DS that aside from like Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword and Wind Waker, some of the big console ones. But like, you know, it's got Majora's Mask, Ocarina of Time in, you know, their remade versions. Every handheld game, lots of the classic console ones. But yeah, if we're not counting any of that, man, that's really tough. I'm leaning towards 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
But no, man, I don't know about that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can.
SNES is a safe bet.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
Oof. I don't know.
Okay.
I genuinely don't. If you're not counting backwards compatibility, I might either go SNES or 3DS. I think.
Yeah. Do we count Mario All Stars on Super NES?
I think. Sure. Yeah,
that counts.
That counts.
Yeah. Then that. I don't know, man. Then that's.
Yeah.
Then I think it might that's be SNES.
Because the thing about the SNES is it's in this magical place where like. It is still, like, a lot of those games just 100% hold up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, NES is, like, you're getting a little dated, and because the N64 was sort of figuring out...
Oh, we've talked about that so much on the show, how, like, 16-bit improved everything that the 8-bit did, but then 32 or 64-bit generation was still learning so much that it's, like... The SNES games and of that era have aged so well, where those other games on either end have aged like pretty poorly because there's still so much learning happening.
Like you could release Link to the Past today, and it would just be a good game.
I think that's what Best Buy is trying to do.
Yeah,
that's good point.
No, the Super Nintendo is phenomenal, also because it got tremendous third party support, which you can't really say for the GameCube or the SNES or the Wii U. The Wii did. But also, I don't think that system's aged very well because of A, motion controls, and B, it's a standard definition, like 3D, 3D console. And so, like, a lot of, I think, like, games like Twilight Princess were ugly on day one. It's a great game.
Yeah.
It's just, it's just not, it wasn't great looking.
I agree. I don't think it was, like, really great looking until the HD version on Wii U.
Tyler Core says, I'm traveling from Australia to attend E3 this year. My question is, though, do you guys enjoy fans coming up to you and saying hi, or is E3 not the place for that? I always enjoy it. I think, like, if you see, if you see me like literally talking on camera to a camera, then that's probably not a great time.
Yeah.
But or if we're like interviewing a dev and you crash through the wall and you're like, hey, big fan, then that's tough. I mean, you know the boundaries of stuff like that. But also, like, if you see us, come say hi. My pet peeve is when I am at one of these shows and someone sees me and doesn't say anything, and then they tweet at me afterwards and they're like, I saw you.
I just saw you. Yeah.
And I was like, well, say hi. Like, yeah. I might never be in Oslo, Norway again,
right?
You know, something like I had something that happened in Bangor, Maine, like 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, hey, dude, I'm not gonna be back here for maybe ever. Yeah. So, you know, say hi, come say hi.
Yeah, somebody, I can't remember your name, I'm super sorry about this, but somebody came up and said hi to me and took a picture at GDC, and it was lovely, it was great. I agree, I absolutely love when people come say hi,
yep.
I highly encourage you to do it, just don't be offended if I have to run away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's...
it's just we're in such time crunches with that sort of stuff that, like, it's not you 100%. We love saying hi to you. It's just we might only be able to say hi and then go.
I think that's one of the casualties of E3 becoming more, like, public-facing is that, like, it's awesome for people that get to come and experience it, with the exception of the fact that you'll probably wait in line all day to play one game. But industry folks, you know, like, we're so strapped for time and we're doing 100 things at one time. Like,
yep.
But with that said, like, some of my favorite memories from the last couple of years are when people have stopped, like, you and I, and been like, oh, like, Brian and I, like, oh, I loved Link Together. Like, is that coming back? And, like, can we take
world.
A photo? And, like, that's super cool.
I met so many NVC fans at PAX, and it, like, really warmed my heart.
I'm a little bummed this year because we won't have a booth.
Right,
which means that I probably won't make it to the show floor that often
because
I'll be tied to the live show stage. So, okay, Tom, you want to take this next one?
Yeah. So Logan Plant asks, was there ever a time in your career that you struggled to get where you are now? If so, how did you overcome it? I've been pursuing games journalism for a few years now, and I find myself really hitting a wall. I'm trying to find motivation to get back at it. Yeah, I'm probably the worst person to ask about this, to be perfectly frank, because, like, I sort of snuck my way into this industry through an internship that they, like, had to hire me or else they would lose me, and so I just, like, got in. It was it was very weirdly, like, I don't know. I've been very, very lucky. So I defer.
You wash your hands of it.
Right, Yeah.
When I first started freelancing, I was doing a lot of, like, corporate work. I was doing a lot of, like, talking heads or BTS pieces for things. And I first started working as a freelancer for game trailers. And unfortunately and fortunately, I mean, this industry is really about who you know and making connections and really putting yourself out there, I feel like. And so, you know, I just happened to be working at game trailers and, like, working freelance for them opened up some doors to do stuff for, like, Sony and Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And then I started to get to know more people that were in the industry, and people started recognizing me as, like, oh yeah, we saw you shooting for, you know, so-and-so. And so eventually I worked my way into a position where I was shooting freelancing for IGN, and that's how I got my foot in the door here.
Right.
So I guess, like, my advice for that kind of thing is just don't give up, just be tenacious. Like, if it feels like, oh, maybe I'm going out on a limb, you know, reaching out to somebody, like, go out on a limb. The worst they can say is nothing, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great advice.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been working in the industry basically since, like, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, like, when I kind of started my own website and was like, I'm going to do this every single day. And I think, like, to avoid burnout is basically the best way to do that is to come up with new angles constantly. Like, find weird warped perspectives on things that you think need a fresh coat of paint. One of the things that inspired me to begin with was I went to a preview event in, like, 2007 or 2008, or got one of those, like, invites to play a game early. And I noticed that, like, 12 different outlets were there, and every single one of them wrote basically boilerplate versions of the same press release that they handed us there. And I was like, there's got to be a better way.
Mm.
And so we went in with sort of, like, a comedy angle, which is, like, you know, finding a different perspective on it. And I think that that's what sets you apart. And that's what will get you noticed. And that's what keeps things fresh, is challenging your brain to just do something other than just, like, video game preview, video game review, video game news, like, write features, come up with, like, new perspectives on
that. That was going to be my advice as well, or secondary to what I said earlier, but consider, you know, don't be married to the idea of, like, oh, I'm just, like, a hardcore news writer.
Right.
Or I only want to write, like, retrospective pieces. You know, like, a lot of people start here through our Wikis team and come up through the ranks. Like, they freelance on Wikis and write guides for us and things like that, which is, like, a great entry level position, and then they are willing to say, like, or able to say, like, hey, I'd also like to pitch you on like a feature, or I'd like to do like this video or something, and like that's a great way to, you know, get it rolling as well. So don't necessarily like paint yourself into a corner and like, I'm only going to do this one thing.
I met a woman at PAX who was basically like, hey, I've been doing a lot of video game journalism stuff, but I'm also really into, I write about like cooking and food, and I'm like, that's phenomenal. Like, yeah, do a.
I love food.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, exactly. Do a book report every now and then. Like, write a movie review. Like, do something that gets you out of video games. Because I think the thing is, so many people in the video game industry only consume video games, and there's so much more out there. And it will show your flexibility and also keep you out of your, you know, comfort zone if you challenge yourself with some other shit.
Yeah. Carlos Valero writes in and asks, so how about those Avengers Endgame tickets?
Yeah.
Did you guys get your tickets to Endgame?
We did.
I didn't.
You did not.
But I saw that they're selling them on eBay for like the cheap price of $5,000.
Yeah. Opening night tickets for $5,000.
Yeah. So I'll just pick that up.
I guess I didn't get my tickets. Yeah. No. I ended up getting like three or four like very early in the morning. I happened to be up, and then I got into work and a coworker was like, hey, we got like 30 anyway. Yeah. So if anybody needs them. So yeah, IGN, we kind of have each other's backs in situations like that. So
yeah, we have a squad that they were working out of a specific like bespoke spreadsheet where they're like, okay, we're buying tickets here and here, and like they ended up getting like 35 tickets. So
they got on a conference call at 4:50 on a Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain
this to a friend of mine, and they were like, God, why would they do that? And it's like, well, we've seen every Marvel movie for the last 5 years together. Yeah. Like, you know, this is like the culmination of those films. It only makes sense that they would, you know.
We're in such a
weird... Can you believe it? The last Marvel movie ever.
I know, it's so strange.
Pretty wild.
Yeah, they said they got enough money and they're done. Yeah. No, the thing is with us, we're in such a weird specific edge case in that all of us are so deeply entrenched in all this stuff every single day. And we're also like, spoilers flying around like shrapnel when we come into work. We get on a morning meeting where people are like, hey, so we're gonna explain the ending in this video today, and then you go in the back end or our content management system, and you'll see spoilery stuff that's basically just like a headline of like, oh, here's what we thought about Batman showing up at the end of Endgame. So yeah. You know, all this crap. So we end up being privy to all this stuff. So we are not urged, but it is in our best interest to see these movies as fast as possible.
I'm seeing it on Thursday at 6 p.m.
Yeah, I'm going
like
at 7.
Legitimately right after work. So.
Well, I'm going at 7 because it's a 3.5 hour
and movie. You can't stay up past 10:30 these days. Yeah.
Well, I saw some people were going at like 11:50, and I was like, you're going to get out of the movie like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. He's yelling on the street about Vision or whatever.
You want to take this question from Chris Davies? Brian?
Yes. Sorry, I wasn't ready for that. There we are. Would you recommend I purchase a DS now? I've not previously owned one, and even though the system is becoming obsolete, I'm debating whether to catch up on some of the games I've missed. I think Tom's advice was great earlier.
2DS.
Get the 2DS because it will play all of your. It'll play every 3DS game and every DS game.
Get the stupid one that doesn't fold. It's $80. It's probably cheaper now.
Those are actually like regularly. Like I've seen them drop to like $60 with a game like built into
it. It's the price of a game. It's plus insane. A game for every 3DS and 2DS or normal DS game. That's nuts.
I will say though, watching that market, like this is a fantastic time to jump on a bunch of DS games because I think we're a few years away from it like sort of boomeranging and those getting very rare and expensive. But right now people they're just sort of out of thought and out of sight for people to go like, oh, I don't really need that. So
the other thing I'll say to this is don't ever worry about systems becoming obsolete if you're excited to play the things that are already on them because you can buy if you haven't played those games, probably a lot of them are still good games. Like some stuff is going to age out and that's something to be aware of, but like it doesn't matter if it's obsolete if there's so many things already there that you're interested in playing and haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the 3DS, 2DS, plus the eShop on that system makes for such an insane catalog of games.
God,
I think anybody that's even considering a DS in this generation, in this day and age, should do it because like you have an infinite amount of awesome games that if you've never experienced them, they're right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, and the 2DS like pretty much future-proofs you if you want to play 3DS games for the next 10 years. I mean, that is I can't even imagine coming into that library for the first time in 2019 to like get a 2DS for the very first time and just go, hey, you have infinite access to every 3DS and DS game ever made. Go.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, there's
it's
like
so much. It's there's
like,
so much.
There's everything from like Mario 64 to like Chrono Trigger to God, so many Final Fantasies. There's like multiple Animal Crossing games.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
WarioWare's. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, the 3DS is like an excellent system.
Yeah.
And
you don't need the 3D.
Yeah. I'm legit envious of you. There are a lot of these games I would love to play again for the first time.
Tom, you want to take this next one?
I get this one?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Corey Vandenhoogen Band.
What a name.
Really good name. Really good question to follow it up, too.
Also, yeah.
Which Mario brother is the best kisser? You can include Waluigi and Wario if you so wish. They are chosen family.
Do you guys want to know something insane?
Yeah, Brian's kissed all the Mario brothers.
I have, yeah, and the sisters. We had Suda 51 here recently, and we were piloting this like interview thing with him. We asked him 21 stupid questions, and the first question I asked him was, "Who is a better kisser, Mario or Luigi?" And not to spoil our video,
really?
But he said Luigi.
Really?
So I was like, "That's a weird question. Who would ask that?"
I
was like, "Oh, I would."
I think Luigi is. I think Luigi would be too timid and would be like a bad kisser.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And I think Wario and Waluigi would be just the opposite. They'd just be like too much tongue and like too aggressive, and they're probably like grabbing your boobs.
Wario would be biting and stuff.
Yeah.
I think this question entirely revolves around who you are in the relationship, right? If you're like the dominant member, if you wear the pants in the relationship, to use a dated phrase, you're going to want to go with Luigi.
They all wear pants. They're overalls.
they're like bonus pants.
They're huge, long pants. They're also not great. Zach and I both dressed. You dressed as Waluigi, and I was Mario for Halloween. Overalls suck, dude.
Yeah, if you've ever never had a wedgie before and you put on a pair of overalls, you will know what a wedgie is, and it will be awful.
When you have to pee and you have to like take all these things off of yourself, and then like it's. Yeah.
And they also, for some reason, and I know you and I both talked about this, but when we unpackaged them because we both got them shipped from Amazon, they stunk.
Yeah,
they smelled like vomit. It was so weird. Anyway, long story short, I think Mario's probably the best kiss.
And I think the reason all those characters run so much is because their clothes smell like vomit and they're holding in poop.
Yep. okay, now we're moving over to Twitter. You can follow us at NVC Podcast. I think that's the right Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Geeky Tom at Geeky Tom asks,
"That's me.
Have you ever passed on a purchasing a Nintendo item and later regretted it? If so, what was it?" Mine. This question. I automatically saw exactly what it was, and mine was the GBA adapter for GameCube.
Oh,
yeah? Yeah, I loved GameCube so much. I love GBA. GBA has an awesome...
The Game Boy, the Game Boy Player?
Yeah. GBA has such an awesome library, and it would have been so much fun to play those games on a TV, and if I still had it today, but I totally passed on it, and they were really hard to come by after a while.
So, you know what's crazy about that? The aftermarket on that is super weird, because the actual physical thing itself is not that expensive. What's really expensive is the boot
disc. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a GameCube mini disc that just has a Game Boy Advance logo on it and says Game Boy Player, and you need that to boot the system into GBA mode.
Mm-hmm.
I've told the story before about playing Warrior Twisted or something, by the way. So you're like straight up holding a it's rickety. But yeah, that's I don't know if somebody figured out how to make bootleg discs for that thing, you could potentially get it pretty cheap, but that's a really good one.
Yeah. Is there any Nintendo stuff that you guys have missed that you wish that you had bought?
They put the trailer for Twilight Princess on a Nintendo DS cart, and it was a promotional item at E3 one year. And at one point, Mark Ryan, who works here and did the VO for our Nintendo Direct, had an extra one and was just like, "Does anybody want this?" And I was like, "Nah, I don't really need that." And I think Andrew Goldfarb was like, "I'll take it." That thing goes for like hundreds of dollars now. It's also one of the coolest collectibles ever because it is a Nintendo Wii video game trailer on a DS cart.
Right.
And there's nothing playable on the cart. You just boot the thing and
watch it.
You can just watch it on YouTube, but it's just like the idea of it is so fascinating to me.
Yeah, well,
so.
You know, blades will bleed.
Yeah.
Tom?
The only thing I'm coming up with is internet for my GameCube. I played all of Phantasy Star Online not knowing it was an MMO. I didn't know that game was an MMO.
What?
I didn't
know.
Come
on, Tom.
I was young. I had literally no clue.
It's right there in the title.
The only time I understood that Phantasy Star Online was an MMO was when I tried to sell it back to GameStop, and they were like, "Sorry, this is an online game. You can't return it."
What
and
did
I was
you
like,
think
what
the
do you
online stood for?
I just thought it was like
a cool
Sword
like,
Art Online isn't online.
Or like Mega Man Battle Network isn't
yeah,
an actual.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I just thought it was a JRPG name. So I played the entirety of that game having absolutely no clue it was an MMO.
Holy
and
crap.
Then I found out when I tried to return it, and then I was like, oh, shit. I should have had online for that game.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry we both drop S-bombs in the show, by the way. Fine.
Hey, guess what? I'm not going to edit them out. Brian, you want to take this next one?
Sure. This is from Acebito. Who's your favorite character from the entire Mario franchise, absolutely including the RPGs?
Mallow. Boom. Didn't even have to look.
Nice.
Mallow's really good.
I love Mallow.
I love Mario.
Yeah.
It's such a stupid, easy
one.
Well,
he says side character. You did miss that. Who's your favorite side character?
Oh, yeah. Side character. Luigi. I don't know. This is a really tough one.
I can go off. Egad's really good. Kumbella from the Paper Mario series is really good. A lot of the Paper Mario characters, I think, are all like all your side people are so great.
Yeah. I really love Fawful.
Yeah.
I like Fawful a lot. Fawful? He's the villain from Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga.
Oh.
Yeah. I love Captain Toad. I think Captain Toad is great. Like he's the best. I almost did you guys one better just then.
Lakitu's are always been really cool to me. Like, he started off as like a villain, and then he sort of helps get your Mario Kart out of the muck. But then I remember playing Mario 64 for the first time and seeing the camera spin around and finding out that game had a cameraman who was... Do you know what's insane is that we've been playing 3D games for decades and we never see the cameraman. And that was one of the first ones we ever played, and it pans out and Lakitu is filming Mario 64. Like, I just love that. He's a cool character. Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. Tom, you want to take this next one?
Yeah. At Gerwitter? What Nintendo game have you gone back and replayed the most, and says themselves, Link's Awakening?
That's up there for me. Probably Super Mario Brothers. Mm. Like, that's the one I think I've played World 1-1. I can't even remember how many times I like and you hit that jump over the first Goomba. That is probably 1,000 times.
Yeah.
God. Like,
I think my most played is either Super Mario World or Wind Waker. I've played through the Wind Waker probably a dozen times.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Kirby Superstar for me.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Great Cave Offensive. I've probably beaten that a dozen times.
Yeah.
Just any of the Dino Blade. I cannot count how many times I have beaten the Dino Blade campaign of that game.
You saying Wind Waker, I realize that with like games like Wind Waker and Resident Evil 4 and Link's Awakening, if I see a screenshot of them, I immediately want to start playing it again. And yeah. I've had that recently. You're playing Breath of the Wild again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that recently too, where I saw somebody, I forget who it was. Somebody on Twitter like looped the intro shot of Link running off up to the cliff, and I was like, I gotta play this game again.
Yeah,
you know.
I think that might have been like Klepek or something. Like, I think he tweeted out, you know, what game has a better intro than this?
Yeah.
Okay, Kenneth Samrang asks about the percentage of playtime on Switch in portable mode versus docked, and he says he's about 80% portable and 20% docked.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do you one better. I think I'm like 90-10. I play my Switch docked way, way more than I play it portable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's funny because I take my Switch with me everywhere.
Right.
But the actual act of like taking it out and getting into a game, like I especially, you know, with games like Breath of the Wild or I've been playing a little bit of Dark Souls on my Switch. Like, those are games that I don't want to sit down and play for 10 minutes. I want to play for an hour and a half, two hours. So like for me, if I'm going to play for that long, I prefer to play it on my TV, kick back, you know. And so I would say that I the majority of my playtime on Switch has been docked.
Yeah. Well, you're like traveling a little less than you used to travel a lot.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, the last year and a half or so, I've been mostly grounded.
Yeah. So I've been traveling a little more. And so for me, it's definitely been in handheld mode. And it's also like, you know, my wife and I had a baby last year, and that made it much
easier. First I've heard about it.
Yeah. Much easier to play video games when you sort of have like a little one nestled in your arms and you're holding a Switch in handheld mode. It also lets you sort of curl around upside down and get comfortable on the couch. And then you wake up at weird hours and stuff. I would say these days it's probably like 70 handheld mode, 30 docked.
Mm-hmm.
But I have three docks hooked up in my apartment.
Someone's earning.
Yeah.
It's a lot of boats.
GM money. Huh. No, I have like a 65-inch flat screen TV. I have a like a monitor connected that I do my music production on, that I have a dock there. And then I have another TV in the bedroom with a dock in there.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
But I'm still 70-30.
Yeah.
I'd say it's interesting. For me, it depends on the games I'm playing. If I'm playing a game like Odyssey or Breath of the Wild, I'm almost entirely playing that on docked. Mm-hmm. But just normal use, if there is not like a big thing I'm actively playing, probably 95% of the time I'm playing handheld.
Wow.
And that's crazy.
Mostly because I share a TV with my girlfriend who watches stuff and plays stuff. And so when mm-hmm. I get home, she's usually using that. And I could ask to use it, and I do sometimes. But mostly I'm playing on my train commute to from the office. So
yeah, Tom, do you know that Tom takes a train 6 hours to get here every day?
Is that true?
6 hours here and back.
It's like a percentage of that number. No, I do play probably about 2 hours of Switch every day just on my commute.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I play a ton of Switch, and I tend to gravitate towards games that will be good in handheld mode as a result, I think.
That's why we like having you on the show, Tom.
These questions came to the nvc@ign.com alias. You can email us there at nvc@ign.com.
Before you get into this question, we're not getting a lot of questions at nvc@ign.com these days. Mm-hmm. And we probably get on average like 4 or 5 a week.
Yeah. Fix that.
Hit us with these questions.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Like, even if we don't ask them on the show, more often than not, one of us will respond with our opinion or you know,
it's true.
Like, we've even started threads in the NVC inbox just because, like, we like to answer those questions. We like to talk about Nintendo. So, like, mm-hmm. please feel free to hit us up at nvc@ign.com.
We also, like, we get so many bad emails, like, as a company, or, like, emails that are just like, So to get one that's just sort of like, who has the best mustache? We all jump on that. This is from Lass. He says, hello, Lass from Norway here. Big fan of your podcast. I listen to your podcast when I walk home, clean the apartment, etc. Here is my question. I'm a huge Ace Attorney fan and love the series. For the Nintendo Switch, the original trilogy will be released soon. Does the trilogy need to sell particularly well for Nintendo to make more games for the series? Huh. Well, Nintendo doesn't make...
That's a Capcom game.
Yeah, that's Capcom. And I imagine this is a pretty simple effort for them, right? Mm-hmm. This is essentially just ports of old games.
Well, the really interesting thing is that the trilogy is coming not just to Switch, but to PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting the Ace Attorney games on PC, which is like very weird.
That is weird.
It's very strange.
Objection.
But I think hopefully that is a sign of, like, if it makes a bunch of money everywhere, maybe there's still interest in that stuff.
The Phoenix Wright series is such a singular and unique series, and Capcom, you know, Capcom likes to test the waters to their betterment and to their detriment, right? Like, I think one of the things that they said about Dragon's Dogma was they wanted to gauge how well Dragon's Dogma would sell before they would consider bringing something like Devil May Cry to the Switch,
right?
And I feel like this is just another one of those kinds of things. And we see, it's not just Capcom. I don't mean to paint them in like a particular light, but we see a lot of these companies testing the waters where it's like, well, we'll bring this and see how it does. And if there's a marked interest, then maybe we can talk about, you know, bringing more games of a similar ilk, or going back to the drawing board and seeing, like, okay, let's take a look at, like, Professor Layton or Phoenix Wright sequels for the Nintendo Switch and see what, you know.
Or Professor Layton, Phoenix Wright sequels.
And sometimes it's a weird one.
Tom's onto something here.
Like, when EA was like, hey, we're going to test the waters on Switch with FIFA. And we were like, that's a tremendously popular video game that a lot of us don't really... That's not what we want from you. It's like, you guys make a lot of games. How about one of these? And they're like, nah.
Why not The Sims or Star Wars, my dudes?
Star Wars. You guys got that. Put Battlefront 1 and 2 on there. Figure it out. I love Star Wars.
Star Wars has never been on a Nintendo system.
Excuse me? I just got a copy of Super Star Wars for my SNES recently.
Did you really?
So
I was actually hoping you'd bring that up.
Yeah, so really funny. I got a phone call from a really, really close friend of mine. We grew up together. She called me and she was like, hey, my parents are moving, and I found a box of old SNES stuff.
Oh, man.
Like, I have a bunch of games and a system. Do you want it? And like, knowing Stacy, I was like, yeah, sure, like, whatever. I was like gonna get Arrow the Acrobat and like Cool Spot and, you know, like all these like bummer games. She shows up at my house on Sunday and was like, here you go, like, here's the games. Every one of the games, it's like a greatest hits collection.
Oh my god,
it's amazing.
Super Mario World, Super Mario All Stars, Link to the Past, Super Metroid, Yoshi's Island, Super Street Fighter 2, like all these amazing games. She probably brought me 20 games on all in. Like, there are a couple that are missing. Pilot Wings. What are some of the other ones? Like, I tweeted about it, and like so many people were like, "Damn, that's a jackpot!"
Yeah,
but yeah, it was wild. Like, I opened the bag and legitimately laughed like a maniac, and I told her, I was like, are you sure you want to give these to me? This is like a collection of the greatest Super Nintendo games of all time.
Yeah, awesome.
And she was like, it's fine. And so now this is a stupid thing to say aloud, but I'm legitimately considering buying a Super Analog NT.
Oh, yeah, you totally should.
I mean, a lot of those games are on the SNES Classic, which I have hooked up to my TV right now, but also it's like, but what if I played the original version?
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you should. I mean, like, when it comes to retro collecting like that,
the
expensive part is the games.
My concern is if I buy the Super NT, that I'll be thinking about Mega Man X3 in the back of my head, and I'll be thinking about Chrono Trigger, and then suddenly, a great collection that I got for free, I'm $500 deep into, and once you start collecting stuff like that, yeah, it's like, well, I could also get these rare games,
That said, though, I think we will see more Ace Attorney on Switch. To me, that series has always been like, it's like a TV show I watched the first season of, enjoyed, but bailed on. Dude. It's gone on for 16 seasons.
I'm excited for the Ace Attorney collection because, like, I love those games, and I think they're extremely replayable, and they're so funny and well-written. I think it's really cool that this collection is coming to Switch.
Yeah, I stopped messing with them, but I'm glad they keep going. I might dabble with the collection because it's cool. In the meantime, Capcom's obviously brought the Mega Man collections. They're bringing a bunch of Resident Evils, so they are supporting the system.
There was another question that I was considering putting in this list today about the Disney Afternoon Collection.
Oh yeah, where the hell
which
is that?
Like, yeah, the question was, do you think they'll Capcom will ever bring the Disney Afternoon Collection? And it's like, I can't believe that's not when that launched. We were like, why isn't this on the Switch? Because those are NES games.
I know it's such an easy win. I feel like they could make $1 million in an afternoon just.
I mean, but when it came out, it was at that period where the Switch was not as ubiquitous as it is now. That came out at the time where like. Probably it would have needed to be in development a while earlier.
Right.
Maybe it
was going to hit launch then, and now maybe they just didn't think about
going back. It's such a beautiful little collection. You know, Frank Sfaldi and his team did such a good job
of
scrubbing that stuff up, and then Nina Matsumoto did a bunch of, like, original art for it. Like, it's a really, really cool, like, game preservation piece. It's really awesome. The counter-argument to that is, like, DuckTales is an amazing platformer, like, one of the best platformers on the NES.
Yep.
Chippendale's Rescue Rangers is like fine. All the rest of those games are like okay at best. You know what I mean? They're not a great game.
Chippendale's Rescue Rangers is, I would say, like a really good co-op game.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't think it's great in single player, and I don't think it's a great game overall, but I have fond memories of it and great nostalgia for it. Tailspin and Darkwing Dunk are.
Darkwing Dunk.
that was one of the games announced on Nintendo Direct, I think.
Darkwing Dunk. Yeah, exactly.
Starring Michael Jordan.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a poop with a hat on it.
Yeah, good. Well, we've gone off the rails, so what do you say we wrap this one up, boys?
Let's do it.
Okay, Brian, Tom, where can everyone find you when you're not on Nintendo Voice Chat?
You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. No, I'm on Twitter at Agent Bizzle. I'm on Instagram at Brian Altano.
Right on.
I'm only on Twitter at Tom R. Marks, unless you want to look at pies I've made. In which case,
that's at Bowtie Pies.
At Bow Pies.
Bow Pies.
Who doesn't? I'm going to follow that. I didn't know about that.
Ooh, that's my Instagram.
That's like a real food porn.
Literally, I don't follow anyone. I don't use Instagram. I just post pictures of pies occasionally.
Perfect. Great. Yeah. That's what my body needs.
And I am, of course, at Zacharias D on Twitter. And I think I'm at Zachary D on Instagram. I can never remember my Instagram handle. But we want to thank you so much for listening again this week. We are NVC, IGN's Nintendo podcast. And we will be back next week, Thursdays, 3 p.m., the only place where you can
get the thing.
That's correct.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.